one in five Wisconsin residents were 60 or older in 2013, according to the American Community Survey. Just today, the Washington Post website has a chart listing baby boomers between age 50 and 69 as the largest generation in Wisconsin. Facts like this document an aging Wisconsin, which is one reason why the Wisconsin Medical Society is praising the federal government's decision to begin paying physicians who begin advanced care planning discussions with patients. To talk about that change, thanks to Dr. Don Dexter, Chief Medical Officer of the Wisconsin Medical Society, and John Maycroft, Program Director, Honoring Choices Wisconsin. Well, gentlemen, let's start with the obvious. What is advanced care planning?
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
Advanced care planning is a process, and that is the really key thing to understand. It is so much more than just a document. It's that process of discussing, planning, reflecting on future medical decisions, including end-of-life care, but not just limited to end-of-life care. So thinking about if you were in that situation where you couldn't speak for yourself, even if you got clobbered later today on your way home from work, who would speak for you? What would be important to you? Do they know that? How would they make wise decisions on your behalf if you couldn't speak? And there's a really great process out there for having these discussions, choosing the person who would speak for you, documenting them in an advance directive, and really making this work a lot better than it usually does in the healthcare setting.
Well, doctor, talk to us about, give us a context. How much advanced care planning has been going on in Wisconsin, and why is it so significant that the federal government, let's get this straight, they have approved payment beginning in 2016 for advanced care planning for Medicaid and Medicare, right, sir?
Right.
Okay, but give us a little history.
Well, Wisconsin actually leads the country in this, particularly in La Crosse, which has been called the best place in the United States to die, because the number of advanced care plans that have been completed there and shared with physicians and health systems leads the country. Wisconsin Medical Society is following that model with Honoring Choices Wisconsin, and we're spreading it. We've been working on this for a number of years, and it's spread throughout the state. It's a statewide program now. The difference now with the government funding it is that doctors will get paid to do this work. In the past, it's been volunteer work and work by, you know, the Medical Society led by John's team to spread this. But now we're going to get this reimbursed, and it's going to give a little bit more impetus for us to do this and do it correctly.
How much advanced care planning, or how much of discussions related to advanced care planning are physicians in Wisconsin generally giving? Is it been given short shrift because they're not getting paid for it, sir?
Well, I think, you know, there's so many competing demands. I mean, if you come to the doctor with an earache, boy, it's kind of tough to bring us up, you know, out of context. There's many families are doing this on their own. You know, I was blessed by a mother who sat my brothers and I down when we were young and said, you know, boys, if something should happen to me, here's what I want. I think she was visionary. Maybe that's part of the reason why I'm so impressed with this program and such an advocate for this, is because I benefited from it. I think many doctors do it routinely, but not all. And it, in part because it's a tough subject to bring up.
John, talk to us about Honoring Choices Wisconsin. How long has it existed? Do you have a number for participants, and how can someone get more information on it?
Sure. We launched in the fall of 2012. We now include 25 healthcare systems across the state, from the small rural hospitals to the large integrated systems and the academic medical centers. What we do is we train teams and staff from these organizations in how to have these conversations. And not just that, but how to set up the systems and workflows so that patients are being offered the conversations before or during an appointment. They make sure it gets scheduled, there's a room to have the conversation, that they meet with a trained facilitator, that it's documented legally, and that it's also entered consistently into the medical record so that everybody knows where to put it in the record, everybody knows where to look for it in an emergency. And so the facilitation training is one thing, but ingraining this in the system and really making it part of the culture of healthcare is, I think, the real achievement we've been able to have.
It seems to me, maybe this is oversimplifying, but you're rewriting the terms of the doctor-patient culture and interaction, aren't you, John? To bring in this discussion of advanced care planning?
Rewriting or going back?
Maybe I use the wrong term, doctor. What's a better term?
Well, I think we're going back to our roots and doing what we've always meant to do. But we're formalizing it and making sure we do it correctly. And I think it's important that we get this done right. This is a critical thing, that people have the right to make their decisions about their end-of-life care.
But it is a big shift from the trend where modern medicine can do incredible things, and we can cure diseases that were thoroughly uncurable 100 years ago. But it also means that patients can go through a lot more medical care, some of which they may not want. All the different tubes that patients can be connected to, some really want to fight hard. I would be one of those who would want to fight hard if I got hurt today. Mm-hmm. But my 86-year-old grandmother did not want that. And she made very clear to our family before she died last year that when it was time for God to call her home, she wanted to go and she was ready. And so I think going back to the roots in terms of really understanding what these situations can be and what patients can want, it is a shift from the trajectory of healthcare, which has often been do more, do more, do more.
What percentage of hospitals or healthcare systems in Wisconsin are now part of the honoring program, John?
Percentage I couldn't tell you,
okay.
But I would say
is it widespread?
It's quite widespread. We have most of the large integrated health systems. We've got 12 rural critical access hospitals. We're in most counties in Wisconsin now, and the coverage areas of each of those systems, if they were to make this the routine part of care, we would now have most of Wisconsin covered.
But you have got to go into these administrators and convince mm-hmm. them of the wisdom of it, and then they mm-hmm. have to factor it in. Are there costs associated with the hospitals and the healthcare mm-hmm. system?
There are. For one, we have to charge some amount of money to run this program. But I think more importantly, it's a real investment on the part of these healthcare systems to train facilitators, commit time to having sometimes 45, 60-minute long conversations where in the past it was fill out the document, check these boxes, sign here, you're done. That's a real time commitment. So there are resources involved, and that's why reimbursement is such good news, because it's finally going to reward these organizations for doing the right thing that they've been doing for years.
Now, thanks for your patience, Doctor. You're a neurologist?
I am.
Well, and you practice in Eau Claire when you're not down here with the Medical Society in Madison?
Right, 50% time in Eau Claire taking full-time call.
Has advanced care planning not been a highlight when you interact with your patients and their families and their spouses and their caregivers?
I would be disingenuous if I said it was a highlight. It is something that we try to talk to patients about, particularly when patients are in a trajectory where, you know, as a neurologist and I'm dealing with people with end-of-life conditions like ALS or maybe longer-lasting conditions like Parkinson's, people with brain tumors, people with dementia, you know, their families need to know and plan for the future. Where this impacts me more is when it's not done. When I'm called to intensive care and a patient can no longer speak for themselves, we're making decisions about ongoing care and the family's at odds. You know, one son says, do everything, and the other family says, Mom never wanted this. And it's just devastating. It's heartbreaking.
Well, this is why in the press release announcing welcoming the statement, the change by the feds, you say you've seen firsthand the stress and conflict that often results when there is not any advanced care planning.
Sure.
You use the term heartbreaking. Is that when you have family members at loggerheads at the most emotional, distressing point in
sure.
their lives?
Yeah, it's you know, you never plan for, you know, a tragedy to happen, to end up in intensive care. And the best gift that I think that I've given my family is pretty clear direction. If that's me, this is what I want. Now, of course, you can't plan for every alternative. But if you have the discussion, that's why John talks so much about the process, about the discussion, the importance of the discussion over the document, because the discussion guides the family, that you make your wishes clear. And I think my family has a very good sense and could make good decisions for me.
Well, let's break this down to some practical questions. If a 30-year-old in good shape goes in for maybe a strained muscle or a physical, mm-hmm. is she or he going to be asked about advanced care planning? Mm-hmm. When does this phase in? At age 30, 40, 50, 60? So just some mm-hmm. practical questions.
We want this to be for everybody. So everyone over 18 who is capable of having this discussion should do it. In practice, most hospitals and systems are doing it at maybe 50 or 55 plus, just mostly because of limited resources, limited ability to reach everyone. But the demand is certainly there. There's a clinic just down the street from here where most of their patients were college students, aged 18 to 30, mm-hmm. and they were all very interested in having these conversations. I am one of those young guys. I've got a 3-year-old son, and it's very important for me to give my values to my wife, who's my agent, and the people around me, I think the best example I could give is having a three-year-old son. My feeling is that if I were in really bad medical shape, the top priority for me is if I can see my son smear yogurt on his face every morning for 20 minutes at breakfast time, sometimes while he's wearing sunglasses, I don't really care what the rest of my day is going to look like. And if I'm in that bad medical situation, I've got to go through hell and back, but there's still a chance I'll be able to watch Jonah smear yogurt on his face, I'm in. Go for it. But that's going to change over time. My preferences are going to be different when I'm 80.
So if you're talking about advanced care planning, these mm-hmm. are the kinds of questions. What's mm-hmm. important to you, John, mm-hmm. as we begin to ask some of these end-of-life questions, or if there's an accident or disease questions? Do I have the dialogue right, Doctor?
Sure. There's about four steps to this conversation. One is reflecting on past experiences. So when your great-grandmother died when you were a kid, the accidents you saw, or, you know, friends as you went through life. So thinking about those experiences. Choosing your healthcare agent, the person who would speak for you in that situation. Sometimes it's a close family member, sometimes it's not. This is not a job for everybody. Talking about the sort of care you'd want or not want if you couldn't speak for yourself. And then talking about some of those personal beliefs, spiritual factors, even personal quirks that would be important to you if you were in that situation. So that could be prayers, rituals, songs. It could be particular people you want to have in the room. It could be opening the windows and making sure there's natural light, which is one of my big pet peeves. All of these are important and need to be part of the conversation.
And the fundamental change here, when the Center for Medicaid and Medicare says they're going to pay physicians like you to do this, mm-hmm. is this is a service that you've obviously been providing to your patients in the past, but now you get reimbursement for
Correct.
It?
Well, we will. I
mean, you will. It's proposed for 2016.
Yes.
By the way, they announced this as a tentative rule. What's the process here?
Well, the details of how that happens, it's a little bit beyond my pay grade. But I think that once this begins, they won't be able to go back. The need is so great. This is just something we need to do for patients, for their families.
Okay.
It's something that we want to do, and if anything, to make it easier to happen. I just can't imagine they would be able to go back on this.
Someone watching the show is going to ask, who is going to ask me to begin the advanced care discussion? Is it going to be my general practitioner? Is it going to be a specialist like yourself? Is it going to be an EMT carrying me in an ambulance to a hospital? Who's it going to be?
No, these are discussions that should be taken rationally and calmly and well before they're needed. You know, in our group, we do it at 55 and over at your physical. But you may be asked, other people may be asked by a medical assistant when you're getting room for a doctor's appointment. Do you have an advanced care directive? If not, do you want information about it? And depending on where you are, you may be directed to honoring choices. My personal feeling is that's the best, or respecting choices in lacrosse. That's what honoring choices is based on. So that program is top notch. But, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat. The key is it's the discussion. It's having, you know, picking a good agent, someone who really can understand your wishes and who will be there, who understands what they're getting into as an agent. Not everybody's a perfect agent.
So let's talk about the transition question, the icebreaker, if you will, on this
Sure.
issue. So is the first question going to be, do you have an advanced care directive?
Yes.
Is that going to be for someone who's healthy? Is that one going to be for someone who's just been critically injured, like you see? Is it going to be for someone who just turned 75? Is it going to be for all of the above?
Sure. Well, for me at my physical, it was at my physical. My doctor asked me, and I went through the honoring choices module with my wife. We did each other's directives, and we were each other's agents. And our kids, we picked two of our kids that we thought would be good secondary agents. Mm-hmm. For me and my patients, it may be if someone comes in and they have a new diagnosis of a disorder that is going to be a serious one. Parkinson's is not an uncommon example. Someone comes in with memory loss. They don't have dementia, but clearly their memory's not where it once was, and that they may be on a trajectory of continuing loss. It's a very important thing that they get these things taken care of when they can. So those are two common times when I would do it.
John, is there a template or paperwork that perhaps my spouse and I would fill out with answering some of these critical questions?
Sure. We have that available on our website, too. It's honoringchoiceswi.org, honoringchoiceswi.org. You can download an advanced directive, also an online fillable advanced directive. And that's important to complete. And then patients should ask their doctors or whoever takes care of them about advanced care planning. Some hospitals and clinics aren't entirely ready for that question, but more and more are, and hopefully patients can have that conversation that will lead to a better document.
And the change in federal policy that mm-hmm. funds this will take it to the next level, right, John?
It really will. We're working out the exact details of who it will reimburse and for what. It seems to be it will be for doctors, nurse practitioners, PAs, a number of social workers. We're not sure about chaplains, for example, although a lot of facilitators are chaplains. But it will reimburse for that time that these professionals take having these conversations.
Doctor, when I'm asked this question, is it usually asked one-on-one first if I come in for a physical one-on-one?
Yes.
But if I'm involved in an accident, it's going to be asked in front of my spouse, kids, grandchildren, clergy, correct?
Could be. Yeah, this isn't meant for at the time of crisis. That's kind of a different... you have to put a different spin on things. This is for when you have time to reflect rationally and calmly with your family, with your agent, about what your wishes are. This really shouldn't be done in a time of crisis. That's a different discussion. I think it's important also that when it's done, when you've completed it, share that information with your doctor, with your healthcare team, so that they know what your wishes are.
Okay.
That's important. And it's not a one-and-done thing. You know, you change over time. So every decade you should revisit it. If you have a new diagnosis, if you have a significant decline, if there's a divorce, I mean, those are times when you want to reconsider taking a look at it again.
This is not a form that belongs in a safe deposit box or deep inside a filing cabinet. This is something that should be in the hands of all the people closest to you and in the hands of your physician. And I think what Dr. Dexter said about how changing the timing of these conversations, because usually the way it's been over the past decades is a patient will have a crisis, they'll be through the emergency room in the ICU, and when they're lying there exhausted, then somebody will bring up the idea of completing an advance directive. We need to do this during the calm parts, when there is more energy, when there's more, when things are just less crazy in healthcare. And before the crises and after the crises, but not in the middle of crises. That's when these conversations need to happen.
How do you train medical professionals such as yourself to carefully and respect the patient, start a dialogue with she or he about these end-of-life issues? Because you've just asked me if I want to talk about advanced care planning. You've just reminded me of my own mortality, and mm-hmm. one reaction that you might see is, whoa, let's not go there. So
that's the beauty of honoring choices. We teach people how to have the conversation. You know, that you're given good evidence-based guidance on the best way to approach this. I mean, it's an honest discussion about values. You don't want it to be threatening. That's why it's really important it's done at the calm in the light of day, right, when people have time to reflect on this, and it's not as threatening. But that's the beauty of honoring choices. We teach people how to do it well.
I would add, there's this myth, I've heard it again and again, that Americans don't want to talk about death, or we all think we're invincible, or we're all afraid to talk about this. We've found that on the first try, when somebody offers a patient this conversation, 45% of them will say yes right away. They're ready, they want to talk about it. And if you ask a couple more times, almost everybody will. In La Crosse, more than 90% of people have had these conversations by the time they die, which is just an incredible number. And so if you offer the opportunity to talk and make plans about a time just in case something bad happened, for a physician to say, this is something I encourage all my patients to do, people will really jump at the opportunity. They're just looking for the vocabulary and the chance to have the conversation. And if you enable that, there's great willingness to talk about this.
There is a willingness to begin this discussion on the part of 45%, but a majority then, what is their reaction? Don't want to talk about it? I'm going to live forever?
I think they want to think about it. They want to bring it home and talk to a family. I mean, like you said, is, you know, it brings up questions about mortality and, you know,
am I that sick?
Yeah,
I mean, wow.
Yeah, what is the doctor always not telling me? But, you know, they want to think about it a little bit, have maybe even have some preliminary conversations at home. I just still can't help but believe that this is one of the best gifts you can give to your family, is to share what your wishes are.
Are we training physicians and nurses and nursing assistants in this? Is that part of the Honoring Choices training program?
Yep.
Component?
The facilitators are often nurses, chaplains, and social workers, although it's not limited to that. So they are often the ones who are sitting down with the patients for these longer conversations. And remember, these are upstream conversations before there's a crisis. If a patient is very, very sick, then the physician needs to be more directly involved in that conversation. So training those facilitators, and then training the healthcare teams and how the systems work, and the physicians and what they can say over the course of just 10 seconds. This is something I encourage all my patients to do. We'd be happy to set you up with an appointment.
When does the role of the physician stop and it goes back to the patient and spouse and kids or grandchildren or caregivers or clergy?
Well, I'd like to think that it never stops, that once we introduce a patient to Honoring Choices or advanced care planning, that once they go back to their family and they talk it over with their spouse, their kids, their clergy, they complete their document, they bring their document in and share a copy with their physician and discuss it with their physician. And then the key is the physician has to honor that.
Is that legally binding?
It's a job description.
Job description.
You would violate a patient's wishes at great peril, I would say. I feel absolutely duty-bound to follow my patient's wishes. And when that's clear to me, that makes my job easier and I can do my work for my patients with confidence, knowing that I'm doing the best thing I can.
The change in federal policy means the beginning of this advanced care discussion is going to start more and more with Wisconsin residents as they visit their medical professionals, correct?
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
How could anybody watching this begin to format some answers to the advanced planning questions?
Mm-hmm. There's some great resources out there. First thing, ask your doctor, ask your healthcare team about having this conversation and see if there are facilitators available to walk them through this. They can also check out the Honoring Choices Wisconsin website. We've got a great video that covers some of those important issues that people might want to consider talking about. There are some other websites that help directly walk people through the conversation. Prepare for Your Care. Just Google that. Prepare for Your Care is a really great tool. The Conversation Project is another resource. And so there are really great web resources out there. But really, if anytime you start a conversation, whether it lasts 5 seconds or an hour, just to get it out there a little bit, just to say some of those words with your family, maybe we should talk about if something bad happened. Even if your family member's not ready yet, they might be in a week, they might be in a year. Any small step is a victory.
How does this relate? What's the relationship between this and the hospice process? I was a hospice volunteer last year.
Great.
And there might be an assumption out there that this type of discussion is really something you do when you're referred to hospice. Mm-hmm. You're shaking your head, doctor?
But I think we're talking way upstream from that.
Okay.
Now, in my mom's case, because she was very clear with my brothers and I what she wanted, when she had her advanced cancer and she wanted no aggressive care, it led to hospice. So in my mom's case, that was the way it led. For John and, you know, his son,
Jonah,
and the
he
yogurt.
He wants to see yogurt all over the face.
You know, that's going to be a different discussion. Probably no hospice for John, at least while Jonah's still smearing yogurt.
Okay.
You know, so they're separate things. I think hospice is great. The way they cared for my mother at the end of her life was fantastic. It helps many of my patients. People actually live a little longer when they go into hospice. But they're separate.
Okay. But I remember, as long as we're telling stories, Jonah and the yogurt and you and your mother, when 2001, when the oncologist looked at my father and said, "I'm going to refer you to hospice, Mr. Walters, do you know what that means?" And my dad shook his head, "Yes." That's not advanced care planning, is it, doctor?
No.
Okay. That should have begun discussion long before he got colon cancer, right?
Right. I mean, ideally, he would have had a chance to express his wishes to his family, and this is what I want, and would help to direct things. End-of-life discussions are a different issue than planning. You know, I've done my advanced directives to my best of my knowledge. I'm pretty well. I'm hoping to do an hour-long bike ride tonight. But should something happen on that bike ride, my family knows what my wishes are.
Advanced directive. Is that the same as the program that you run? Because my wife and I have, okay, this child is in charge of finances. This child is our medical, what do you call it?
The medical agent. Healthcare agent.
Healthcare agent.
Yep.
Have I engaged then in advanced care planning? No, because I haven't talked about some of these factors, these cultural and other factors that you've mentioned, John?
The advanced directive, that document where you appoint your healthcare agent and express your wishes, that document is only as good as the conversation behind it.
Okay.
The document is very important in order to get those wishes in writing, get that healthcare agent appointed in writing, and it can guide the healthcare team in very, very important ways. But if you've just checked the boxes and signed that form without a conversation, it's going to be of very limited value.
Because what could happen is the daughter that's the agent and your daughter that's your financial agent have completely different opinions about what you want, and neither one of them knows.
You've been in those situations where family members... How do you walk that fine line, doctor, where there's no clear directive? They haven't participated in the honoring choices.
It's terribly difficult because we can present the science and the facts of the case, but this isn't about science and facts. It's about beliefs and wishes and you know what their desires were. I have no way often. I mean, most of the time I'm new to that patient and the family.
Yeah.
I don't have a knowledge of what their thoughts and beliefs and wishes were. The family may have completely different ones. That's why this is so important that we share this information so that your wishes as the patient are carried out and your family's relieved of that burden.
Okay, well, John, I'll use myself as an example. My wife and I have the financial designee and the medical designee, and we have a will, but what you're saying is we should then take the next step and go to the Honoring Choices website and download?
Check out some of our resources on how to have the conversation, download an advanced directive, and really just sit down at the kitchen table or in the living room, maybe pour yourself a glass of wine before, during, or after. Reflect a bit on what your experiences are, think about what your values are and what are the things that are really, really important to you. In life, and just talk. We have the facilitators, we can give you the exact formula, but bottom line, just try to start that conversation, and it's hard to get moving, but once you do, it'll open up, and then over time it becomes a lot more easy to talk about just in passing. So my wife and I had that hard conversation a few years ago the first time. We didn't really understand what we were doing or how it worked, but now I can just make passing reference to somebody I know who has dementia, somebody who got pneumonia, somebody who died recently, and you can say, you know, I really wouldn't want to live like that, or you know, I'd be willing to fight harder than he fought, something like that. It's not easy, but I can't tell you enough times, just start that a little bit. Any step is a victory.
And then, doctor, one takeaway from this program is, in light of the change in federal policy, physicians in Wisconsin, we'll be beginning this discussion on advanced care planning more and more.
I hope so. You know, and I was just going to say, in follow up to what John said, if you said, you know, I would never be able to do that, I couldn't talk to my wife about this, I couldn't bring this up, well, then ask your doctor to be referred to a facilitator. Okay. And the Honoring Choices program has great facilitators. They'll sit down, they'll help guide you through this. It shouldn't be frightening. It shouldn't be an onerous thing. That should be a chance for you to reflect on your life, your experiences, your desires, and lay things out if you can't speak for yourself.
Well, let's wrap the program up this way. With the change in federal policy, 5-10 years from now, if this works, what has changed for patients and physicians? Do you want to go first, John, and then Don?
Sure. If this works, it'll be a routine and standard part of care. Everybody will have the regular opportunity to have these conversations with a trained facilitator. There will be rich conversations. They will be documented in advance directive. That directive will be available in the medical record, and the healthcare team will know how to honor those wishes as they go through care.
And for physicians like you, sir?
We'll follow. We'll get clear guidance on what your wishes are and be able to follow them.
Yes.
Do the right thing.
And you'll be
patients.
Compensated for it.
I think that's an important part to get this going.
Yes.
But you know, that for me, that's not the highlight. The highlight is doing the right thing for the patients.
And do it while you're healthy, mm-hmm. to have an honest conversation with those you love and who love you.
Right. Absolutely.
On. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Don Dexter, Chief Medical Officer of the Wisconsin Medical Society, and John Maycroft, Program Director for Honoring Choices Wisconsin. Thanks for coming in to talk about a very important subject.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.